If you have ever struggled with approval issues, I hope you will hang with me for this episode. My guest, Warren Augustin, shares his story of emotional abandonment, a lack of belonging, being date raped, and how it set him up to be an extreme people pleaser. For many years, he actually used money to buy people's love, attention, and approval. He talked about how out of alignment he was with his core values and just how bad it had to get before he asked for legitimate professional help. He had his Phoenix rising from the ashes moment in mid-2021, and his life doesn't remotely look the same. He is experiencing a level of relationships like never before. Warren works in the child care industry.
Hello, Warren Augustin. Welcome to the Authentic Gay Man podcast. I'm really glad you're here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'll start off with telling the listeners a little bit about how you and I know each other. And once again, we've known each other for maybe about a year. And we met in, yes, you guessed it, the large virtual gay online group. So I won't go into any more detail there. Everybody's heard this story. Do you have anything to add, Warren?
Yeah, no, we definitely met in that community, and it serves this purpose. And I'm so thankful that through that purpose, I was able to make some really personal relationships like yourself and others.
Thank you, Warren. Yes, I agree completely. And, you and I have sat in some classes together. We have been in lots of group calls together, and we even were at a live retreat at one point together. So we've had breakfast once when you came through my city. And so, yeah, it's been pretty amazing, pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was totally amazing. And again, like, I'm really thankful for the opportunity because, yeah, like, it's a definitely special time.
Yeah, I agree completely. So my question that I ask everybody, Warren, how do you define, or how would you define what it means to be an authentic gay man?
So how that means for me being authentic is just really being at my core. Like, how do I feel? Like what allows me to feel good? What allows me to feel pleasurable? What allows me to feel honest? And really breaking down like my walls, like nothing that's pre-scripted, what comes into alignment where I'm not unashamed and I can just be myself and not have any judgment around me. So essentially just speaking without a filter or acting without a filter and knowing that I'm going to be loved and cared about.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I've heard so many individual definitions of what it means to be an authentic gay man. And they have all been amazing. And it's almost like at some point I can combine them all in a book, you know, but it'll all be just defining one thing, but it's been amazing. So question of the day, what is the biggest challenge in this lifetime that you have either overcome or are in the process of overcoming?
You know, I'm always going through some type of process, but, you know, the major thing that I have been working on for majority of my life, but more specifically in the last 6 months, is really claiming back my power as an authentic gay man, African-American gay man. And that's really been the biggest challenge for me, is because I have to kind of rework or rewire some programming that I had in my psyche, in my mind, in regards to like, how Warren can be loved? How can Warren be accepted in the gay community or in life in general? Growing up, I had some kind of trauma experiences that really kind of shift me in a different direction. And in that direction, it just put this pressure on me to always perform. And I believe I took that into when I came out when I was 18. So that's kind of been the biggest challenge in regards to coming back to myself, coming back to who I am as a gay Black man, and really owning that and being proud of being African-American and being proud that I'm gay and that I have value and purpose on this planet, on this earth.
Wonderful. So if you're willing, I would be interested, and I'm sure the listeners would be interested. Would you be willing to share a little bit about those traumas that you experienced that set you up with this challenge to begin with? What put you in that place of challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in the Northeast of the United States, in New York specifically. And my parents are of Caribbean descent. So growing up, there was a lot of different dynamics in the home because essentially my mother took care of me. My father was always working, and there was just a lot of different dynamics. You know, in transparency, I was adopted. So in that adoption, there was a little bit of a resistance, or there really was about like, how do we do this? Thankfully, my father is biological to me as my uncle. So I am still kind of in the family. So growing up, I really felt abandoned. I really felt, in a sense, I was always alone. Like, I was always just the third person, like, oh, this is our responsibility, but there was never any love. There was never any connection. I was just an obligation.
So Warren, how old were you when you found out that you were adopted?
So I was 7. So I was 7, and it was really by mistake. It really was. In the Caribbean, we speak a different, in one of the islands, there's a different language that's being spoken. And I actually know that language. So in conversation with two family members, they were having a conversation in our native language. And I understood what they said. And that's how I knew at the age of 7. So, and then whenever I asked my father like about it, then it was confirmed that it was true. But then it was really like, you don't have to worry about that because that's just past story. So just forget about it. So it really was in a sense that it was kind of just brushed away because the situation of that is, you know, everything is... In growing up, everything was a class society. My parents are a class society. So, you know, it really was a shame of what happened. But then my grandfather took control of the situation and basically had my uncle take care of me so that it didn't cause any disruption out there in government, because my grandfather was part of government, and to have something like this happen, we didn't want any bad attention on the family's name. So it was something kind of hush-hush. Still, people to this day do not know about that. They do know now. They know now, but...
How old would you say you were when you realized that it was this hush-hush thing, when you had the awareness that it was this big family secret?
About 9, 10.
And what came along with that? Because, you know, suddenly you realize you're kind of a secret. How did that impact you?
I remember that it placed me as very lonely. It's like, why? Why do we have to keep this a secret? Like, I always kept asking the questions, why? But then I was scolded verbally, like, don't pay attention to that. Like, you need to stop talking about that. And kind of like open threats. So I really never really addressed it. I just kind of just played in my own mind, like, why is this happening? You know, like, what does this mean? And now at this age, I'm really thinking about like, oh, well, like, no one really loved me. Like, why did this happen to me as a baby? Like, did they not love me? You know, things like this. So there's a lot of questioning, processing through that. And through that, I had to find like an outlet to really love myself. So I started having alter egos. I started pretending. I started, telling people, like telling my peers, like in fifth grade when we moved here, I live in Texas, and when we moved to Texas, I started telling, my peers in my class that, oh, my dad owns a bank, and I have a butler, and I have this, and I have that, really trying to perform because I was seeking that love. And maybe to give a little bit context, when I moved to Texas, it was a completely night and day. So I was the only African-American child in my class. And I felt like an outsider. So, I dealt with abandonment as a child. Now I'm coming into a new environment when I'm 10, 11. Now having to relive that pain of being the outsider, being the, being the one that's different. And all I wanted to do was to fit in. All I wanted to do was be cared about and to be loved. And at that time, I felt that I had to create these alter egos and really try to buy and impress people to love me. Like, I didn't believe that my authentic self was lovable. Like, I had to create something outside of me to be loved.
So you fabricated a whole life in an effort to to gain validation and to gain acceptance.
Yes. I certainly did that. And I remember that I would never let people come to my house because it's like you're telling these lies at a young age, at 10, 11, and you have to like run and like hide and you have to kind of make pretend. So at a very young age, I knew that once you tell one lie, you have to have another lie. And it became all of these lies. And also during that time, the word gay started being thrown around. Faggot used to be around that time was thrown around. So, I was going through a different layer of bullying. Well, I won't say bullying, but I was going through a new phase of bullying. That was around the time when I started being bullied about my voice, about how I walked, my mannerisms, things like that. So now in my life, I have three things. I have the abandonment from an infant. I have not fitting in a community when I'm 10. And now I have bullying. So I have three things that I'm navigating at the age of 12, 13. And really really asking myself, how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to have this love and acceptance? And it just created more time for me to play pretend, have more alter egos. And
I would think that all of those layers of things that you describe would contribute to a pretty deep sense of not belonging.
Yeah, absolutely. Not belonging. I felt like an outsider. Even the adults around me, like my teachers and people of the faculty of the school that I was going to, like I felt like an outsider. When I would ask for help or I would ask for guidance, I was always looked upon as crazy, as I had a lot of interpretations back then that I was very dirty and that I was very unworthy. And that was probably something inside of me, but I felt like there was no assistance for me. So I just kept quiet and I just continued being alone. And that was really damaging for me.
So what was out of all those experiences and it came with the first one, but it kept being reinforced. What was the message that you were getting? If you were to distill that down into one sentence, what was the overall message that you were getting about you? It would have probably shown up in the form of an I am statement. What was that message?
I am dead. Like, I am dead. Like, I literally felt like I did not want to live because of the pressure, the social pressure and the pressure that was around me. So I am like, I am dead. That came to me very instantly. Around that time, like, I really wanted to die because I didn't like being Black. I didn't like being dark skinned. I didn't like any of that. I didn't like any negative attention to me.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Well, tell me how the story progressed. So you're at around age 13 now. Where did you go from there?
Yeah. So at age 13, so I went to high school, and that's when the major bullying started happening. And I just kind of navigated through 14, 15, 16. And then, you know, around 17, 18, that's when I started to see something was different, right? Because, you know, I started having some information being presented to me that was like, oh, this is going to be my golden ticket. So I got some money when I was younger around that time. And, you know, I thought that this was going to be my golden ticket because now, like, I have access to some financial resources and now I can really give people what they want and really buy love because I have access to these resources. So, you know, I remember when I got my first credit card, immediately I went to the store and bought people gifts. Like, I bought, like, the girls in my class that were breaking up with their boyfriend, I bought them, like, handbags and wallets, and it was a little too much, but at that time I was just seeking love and approval. And that actually down spiraled very quickly, because I realized that I was being used, but I didn't want to acknowledge that I was being used. Like, I was very, very in denial. Like, I would have the indications, I would have the intuition or the feelings within myself that these people are using me, but this is like my only way to have my temporary validation of love and appreciation. So if I have to go and buy someone a gift card or buy them something to get that validation, you know, for my itch of being loved, then I'm willing to do that at any cost.
Did you realize at the time that it was not the real deal? Did you realize that people were taking advantage of you and that you were actually, you know, buying their attention?
So in the moment, no. But eventually when I continue like buying like stuff with like the same person or the same people, I knew based off of the patterns, like, okay, I give you something on a Thursday, Friday we're friends, Saturday we're friends, Monday, I don't know who you are. And it just kept repeating that cycle. So I was familiar of the cycle of events, but I was basically lying to myself that, oh, they're my friend. They're my friend. I just need to just support them. And I just need to listen to their sad stories and just give them what they want so they can be happy. So that's where the people pleasing started, because I allowed people to tell me their sad stories, and I would feel very sorry for them. And, you know, most of the time it was around relationships and love. Like, oh, my boyfriend broke up with me. And around this time, it was mainly girls, like around like the 17, 18, 19, it was really girls. I really didn't have a lot of guy friends because the guy friends were all straight. The guy people around me were all straight, like masculine people that didn't like gay people and that would push me down and really bully me. So I always kind of surround myself with the girls. So, yeah, so the people pleasing started around that time of really utilizing, you know, just my resources to buy relationships. And how this turned into is when I actually started going out there in the gay community, I just brought that same pattern of events into the gay community and understanding. You know, at first I thought that this was going to be my opportunity to really be among my people, among my kind that understands me, that, you know, just buying into the I don't want to call it propaganda, but just going into this around this time, I think was maybe like 2008, 2009, where it was like, love is love. We love one another. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like these are my people, not realizing that in my opinion, at around that time, the gay community was pretty prejudiced and pretty racist and pretty in a cliquish like thing, just like in high school. And I'm like, oh man, I now have to buy into these groups to be accepted. And there were some pretty big mistakes that I made in regards to my finances, because immediately when I revealed who I was, immediately I had a lot of sharks around me. And it felt good to have the sharks around me because I was getting all of this love and validation. But then once the money ran out, once the resources were no longer there, now I'm just damaged goods. And this is where we come into me being very desperate for love and attention, that I would compromise myself and I would drink heavily to just break down my walls so that I can meet someone. And some of the people that I was meeting in that season, they were not the best people to be with. And unfortunately, one of those individuals took advantage of me. I'm really still unclear, like as of today, I'm still unclear what exactly happened. But based off of how I can piece it and based off of just, you know, just things that I know, I was at a bar one Friday evening and I was given a drink. Around this time, I would just drink anything that was given to me. And I drank this drink and all I remember was waking up in somebody's bed and like having a lot of pain, like in my lower body, and having a lot of excessive bleeding. And that was really traumatizing to go through some type of sexual trauma like that.
So and you're describing date rape, basically. They slipped something in your drink and then completely took advantage of you.
Yes. And that is something I'm still navigating as of today. I'm still navigating that. It's something I'm definitely still navigating through. But I know in community, you know, I will definitely, you know, process through that healing and that shame that is around that. But that was the first incident of that.
So Warren, have you worked with a professional, like a therapist, or done any type of trauma recovery around that particular experience?
So no, as of right now, I am in the process on doing that because that has been revealed to me, and some experience I've had that has been revealed to me that is something that needs to be addressed.
I agree completely.
So yes, I am in the process on exploring different options to address that, because I do believe that once I address this will really help me reinforce me being authentic to myself and really opening myself to new opportunities where I'm not fearful and I can trust and I can be safe. And I do believe that when I'm able to trust and I'm able to be safe in environments, it supports my authenticity.
Absolutely. And I'm very pleased to hear that you're going to take some action and get some professional help on this, because in my experience, trauma of that nature is it will affect every relationship. And I don't mean just romantic relationships. It will affect every relationship in your life left unaddressed. So I think that trauma never goes away on its own. It's like we don't sweep something under the rug and come back later and lift the rug up and it's clean under there. Right. We, you know, when we lift the rug up, whatever we swept under there is right there. It isn't going anywhere. So I'm really very pleased to hear that you are exploring and going to address that with a professional, because it will play a big role. This is my own opinion, but it will play a big role in your journey and in your recovery and in your quest to live life as an authentic gay man.
Yes, I totally believe, because that has definitely been an area that has restricted me, especially in my dating life. You know, I would meet men, very nice men, but of course, with any type of process on getting to know someone, then you get to that intimacy part. And, you know, my term for intimacy has changed recently, but in this context, like I'm talking about sex, and then that's when I would freeze up, because then now I have to kind of explain to someone why I don't want to do certain things. And then you have this resistance, and then you have this, like, it's just, it causes a lot of issues. So for a long time, I would not date, or I would not even explore the option of, you know, getting to know men, just because I didn't want to face that question of why can't we not do this? And, you know, I didn't have around those times in my mid 20s, like 20, 23, 24, 25, I didn't have the capacity. I was still processing the trauma of when I was 21. And I just did not have the capacity for that. And actually, in transparency, like the years after that assault happened, I actually went through a very down spiral that, like, I just was just partying every weekend. And, you know, like my homegirls, we would all go to like the bars and we would just do like some crazy stuff. And, you know, just like, I don't care about the world kind of thing. And, you know, all of that. And, you know, thankfully I had some safeguards put in place that it actually got pretty bad, that I had to basically, you know, have a conservatorship for 10 years because of the patterns that I have. And that actually was a godsend, that I signed the paperwork to have a conservatorship, because like, if I didn't do that conservatorship, I don't know how I would, like, basically I would, I don't know what I would have now. So, you know, things happen in the blessings, right? So, you know, I really, you know, I'm just so thankful for that. But yeah, I went through a really hard time. Yeah.
I have a question for you. You talked about that assault experience making it very difficult for the physical intimacy aspect when you're dating or in a relationship. How did that experience affect your ability to be emotionally intimate? And you can speak on in those, you know, romantic relationships, but we also, there's such a thing as emotional intimacy in our friendships or in our relationships with family members. Please speak to how that assault affected that emotional intimacy in your life.
So it affected me because I did not trust, like most people. I didn't trust most people. Like, people would tell me, well, okay, Warren, I'm going to do this. And I would never believe it to be true. Or, Warren, allow me to do this for you. And I would have a very negative attitude and very bitchy attitude. Like, leave me alone. Who the hell you, like, it was basically a 360. Like, I had like a lot of anger. a lot of emotion. So I didn't allow myself to be vulnerable. I didn't allow myself to.
Sounds like you had specific ways that you pushed people away when you sensed emotional intimacy, when it was starting to get close to that. Am I understanding correctly that you had just ways that you pushed people away?
Yes, I had some very strong boundaries in regards to how I did things. Like I would allow, like, so in regards to like, you know, actually people touching me, I didn't want people touching me. I didn't want people in a certain, I still kind of do it today. Like if people come up to me at a certain point, I actually naturally back away.
Well, and I know you use the word boundaries, and there may be a little bit of it in there, but what I'm sensing that you're describing is more of a coping mechanism, almost like a defense mechanism or a coping mechanism.
I agree, yes.
Because a boundary is usually from a cleaner place, you know. What you were doing there was more out of a triggered place rather than a grounded place. And so they're very similar. But I think of a boundary as being something that comes from that more grounded place. And what you're describing was not really grounded. It was more triggered. It was like, whoa, the fuck up, you know? And that's kind of a coping or a defense mechanism. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. So there was a lot of, defensiveness and there was a lot of times where, because I hid that within myself, you know, I couldn't tell my parents, I couldn't tell people around me, because then that would be like, oh my gosh, why did that? Like, it would have been my fault, right? Like how, like you're a fool, you're stupid, you're dumb. How, you know, it would have cast some negative, attention towards me, and I didn't need any more attention, negative attention in my life. So I just kept it to myself.
Well, now at this point in your life, is the experience with the assault something that you more openly talk about?
I'm starting to gain the power and the strength to start talking about that. For a very long time, I wouldn't even address the topic. But today, recently, actually, I realized that is an area that I really need to unfold in a very safe container. So I am in the process on doing that.
Well, and I want to, I'm in awe in the moment. I mean, I'm in awe, you know, because you're here, and I do everything I can to create a safe container, but you've just discussed an intimate detail of your life that's going to go out on the waves for, you know, anybody in the world to listen to it that wants to. Yeah. And that's a huge step, my friend. Yeah. That's a huge step in your journey to be able to open up, and because I know from some of the other guests that have divulged something during their episode, something that they were speaking of for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's been very freeing for them. It's been incredibly freeing for them. And so whether you realize that in this moment, you know, we are, you know, AA says that we're only as, we're only as sick as our secrets. And these things are secrets that we keep. You just mentioned for many years that you have kept this as a secret. And our secrets become our shadows. And they're the things that eat us from the inside out like a cancer. Mm-hmm. And this is no longer a secret.
All right. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's you don't have to look over your shoulder wondering when someone is going to find this out about you now, because the cat's out of the bag.
Right.
So what a bold thing you've done. And I just want to, I'm honored and to be audience to that. And I'm just inspired and honored. And thank you for that. What a bold move.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I do believe that our voice is our gateway to our life. And that's something recently that I had to really embodied in my life is that when I'm vulnerable, when I'm transparent, when I just allow those experiences that I've kept hidden for so long, it's allowing someone to be freed as well. So it goes back to my core vision of my life. So I appreciate your words of your words.
Thank you. That's beautiful, Warren. So you said something a few minutes ago that I'd like to backtrack and visit for a minute. At one
Sure.
point you said, the meaning that you took out of those experiences, I embed in all of this process through all of those years from when you were 7 and found out that you were adopted to even up recently, have in that feeling of I am dead, did you ever consider taking your own life?
I have considered, yes, I have considered taking my life actually when I turned 30. So about three years ago, because of just the tension and just the rejection and the trauma, like all of the stuff that was bottled up inside of me. But yes, so to answer your question, yes, I have. And something told me just to keep on. I think I don't think I know I had some divine interference when it came to that. Because at the time I thought I found a solution. Like at the time I felt I had hope, right? And yeah, at the time I felt like I had hope. That was when I found this social group that we met in. And that was my opportunity. That was my hope, right? So yeah, to answer your question, yes, I did contemplate taking my life, but in a moment I actually did get hope. And I think that was divine for that season. And I'm so thankful that I found that because that's ultimately what saved my life.
Well, and you made a choice, Warren, because you accepted that hope, because that hope could have, you could have been presented with that hope and you could have just negated that hope. But you chose to accept that hope, and you might not be sitting here having this conversation with me right now if you hadn't accepted that hope.
Yes. So I chose to live on because I knew there was an opportunity. There was an opportunity, and I wanted to explore that opportunity. I actually gave myself one more chance. Let me see what this opportunity is about. So.
Well, and I know you mentioned to me very briefly in a previous conversation that sometime last year there was a massive turning point.
Right.
I would love to hear what led up to that, what that turning point was, and how it's changed your life. What's going on since that shift? So please, I will be quiet and let you share.
Okay, so where do I start? So, I'll start in July of 2021. So, for the past, well, let me start from here. From February 2020 to July 2021, I was part of a gay social group, and essentially throughout that time frame, like I had a lot of like intuition, like I my myself, like not myself. But like I had a lot of feeling that something wasn't right. But again, from what I just shared from my early years, I would just really neglect those feelings. Like, no, like I am in a loving space. This is what I want. It's very addicting. I'm getting a lot of attention. It's like I'm getting all of this love. So why, like, what? Shut up, like intuition, like this is what I want. I don't care. Like if whatever's happening is happening, it's not happening to me. So I'm just going to just be here and just accept all the love. And quite honestly, not pay attention to my feelings, right?
Not pay attention to your higher self that was giving you these intuitive messages, right?
Yes, my higher self. I wasn't listening to my higher self, because I was just so fearful. And this is where the codependency comes in. In my case, I was being fed words of affirmation, and I was giving attention. Like, essentially, I was a poster child per se. If I gave an example, it would be like a poster child, one of the poster children. So there was a lot of love and attention. And, you know, I had a lot of, I won't say a lot of people, but I had some people around me that really kind of saw these behaviors and started pointing it out to me, and I would take their word of advice, but I wouldn't embody it. And you know, going to July of 2021, that month, something was not right. You know, I was making some new changes in my life, and I was getting more into my spiritual growth, and I was more intentional of having people for me to be revealed and those people who are not for me to be removed from my life. And I didn't understand what was happening. Right. So, you know, July 2021, a lot of shifting started to happening, and I had a choice. I had a couple of decisions that I had to make. I had a decision to stay, not trusting my intuition and just being fed a lot of bullshit and just a lot of things. Or I had an opportunity to just see the bullshit for what it is and move on with my life. So I was kind of in the middle. And going back to the people pleasing and the codependency, in this time, I really wanted to save people. I wanted to wake up people. I wanted to, you know, just everybody be kumbaya, because, you know, we're all gay brothers. We're all kumbaya. But what I learned today is that you cannot change people. You cannot force people. You can't do the work for them. So essentially, in a nutshell, I kind of divulged some information that someone told to me in the attempt to wake up somebody. And today I know that was very wrong, because also when someone is very vulnerable to you and confided in you, that's like a gem. Like, that person has really just unleashed all their walls and they're coming to you transparently. And I actually take accountability because I broke that trust, but I did it in a way. At the time, I felt that I wanted to wake up someone so that we can all be saved and all be kumbaya and love. But, you know, in August, I had a big awakening, because that came to the surface. August 2nd of 2021, that all came to the surface. And it was in that point where I knew that the stuff that my higher self was telling me, the stuff that was being confided into me, that told me, you better watch out, this is what's going to happen, it all came blown into my face. And I had a conversation with an individual that same day, and I basically asked this individual, tell me the truth, what is happening? And this person just lied right to my face, actually on a Zoom call. And it was in that moment that that I knew I had a problem. I lost some good friendships. I lost, I lost everything. I won't say I lost everything, but I lost majority of the friends that I had accumulated within that year and a half, just because I refused to listen to my higher self. So it was in those broken moments where I was kind of winging myself off of the codependency drug of just love and attention and just praise, where I knew that I needed to find help. So I actually found myself in another community that's gay oriented, and I asked for help. I sent a message to a gentleman, and I said, like, hi, my name is Warren. this is some of my problems I'm dealing with. I need community. I need help. These are my problems, and I need a community to work on it. Like I need to be in community. So it was in my vulnerability of asking for help that people started appearing in my life to really showcase my authenticity, for me to work on loving myself, loving my race. Show me what is authentic gay community, in my opinion. What is authentic coaching? And it didn't cost me tens of thousands of dollars. It required an investment, but the investment was very minimum compared to some of the investments I made previously. So that. In a nutshell, that was the awakening. And I would have dreams around this time in the August of September 2021 of my deceased grandfather, you know, like at a tree, and just showing me like, this is why, like, I had these things taken away from you, because if I didn't take these things away from you, this is what you would have done. And also, let me put it on the record, the recording. I was, before this awakening, I was very close, because I was really heavily codependent of giving tens and thousands of dollars to people that were not in alignment to me, but my higher self, like my higher self was saying no, but my mind was saying yes, because you need to feed this addiction. Okay. So you need to let this money go, give this money away, and just to get more love and validation. But I do believe that my mistake was actually my blessing. So my mistake was actually sharing this information to another individual to wake them up, but actually it was a blessing, because if I didn't do that, I would have lost big time. I would have lost, I probably would have committed suicide. Let me just be very transparent, because of me doing something that I knew I was not in alignment to, but because I was very dependent on love and attachment and praise, that I was going to do. So essentially, that person that I'm no longer friends with actually saved my life. So I will always love him. He will always be part of me, because essentially he saved my life, because he essentially stopped me from taking my life.
Wow. That's powerful, Warren. You know, I want to acknowledge you on several levels. First of all, for reaching out for the help that you reached out for. That's so hard, and so few are capable of doing that. And so you set a beautiful example here for our listeners of what can happen when we reach out and we ask for the help that we need. And then, better than that, we allow ourselves to receive the support. The other thing I'd like to acknowledge is that you have come full circle. You've already realized that what appeared to be like the biggest, like, you know, turd in your life, suddenly you realize has been the biggest gift. Yes. You're able to look at, yes, it blew up in my face, and thank God it did.
Yes. Thank God it did. Yes.
Thank God it did. And, you know, I find that's true. And it takes, some of us never really get there. But if we can get there, if we can come to the place where we realize that the biggest trauma that we lived through, the biggest wound that we have, also can be our biggest gift, depending on how we respond to it. I, like you, went through an insane amount of bullying growing up, like insane amount of bullying from the time I was back as far as I can remember until I was in my early 30s. And it was painful. It was awful. I would never want to relive that. I would never wish that on anyone. But I also realize now that I wouldn't be the man that I am if I hadn't gone through all those painful experiences. And I like the man I am. I would not even be remotely the man I am if I hadn't been through all those experiences. As a person, for the first 33 years of my life, endured and accepted an insane amount of bullying. Any friend that I have now will tell you, Maddox doesn't take shit off of anyone. And I wouldn't be able to do that if I hadn't been on the other end of the spectrum and experienced, or the other end of the continuum, however you want to word that, and experienced that. And I love what you're sharing about this, is you have been for a lot of your life in a dark space, and you have had this major cornerstone turning point in your life. Not that there won't be more, there's rarely just one, but sometimes there's one really significant one, and you're on a different trajectory now. I can sense that in your, although we had a lot of interaction last year, we have had very little in the last 6 months.
Yes.
And so this is all a new story to me. I didn't know any of this. And it's a beautiful story. And I can just say, wow, you know, you've come a long way. I can see it, I can hear it, and I can feel it. Warren, it's on every level, and it's just amazing to be audience to this.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, I told myself, I don't want to feel those feelings again, those feelings of betrayal, not betrayal, but that I let people down and betraying others. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. So ultimately I had to tell myself, like, wake up, Warren, like you need to ask for help. And I'm thankful that I did.
Well, and in this awakeness and in this, like, really, I guess, blossoming into authenticity and vulnerability, what has that shift made possible for you in your life wasn't possible before?
Oh my goodness. When I deal with people from a romantic standpoint, you know, I'm very vulnerable. Like, I won't say on the first conversation, but, you know, it sets my intentions. Like, I'm very confident in how I'm presenting myself to men. Like, this is me, you know, put everything on the table, you know, and being okay if they are not agreeing to who's in front of them. Right. You know, there's no persona. There's no, like, oh, I got to hide this or anything like that. It's like, I'm just speaking who I am and, like, take it or leave it kind of thing. And it provides me a confidence, because I have learned that a lot of men that I'm connecting with right now is, they appreciate that. They appreciate that vulnerability. They appreciate that directness, because no one wants their time to be wasted. So that has allowed me to seek opportunities in my connections and relationships. In regards to opportunities, you know, as I have allowed myself to be authentic, I actually had a lady, I used to, like, kind of hide that I was gay. I think that is very obvious, but many people think sometimes I'm straight. So, you know, I've been very open, like, social media wise, writing wise, you know, about talking about me being gay and things like that. And I had a lady that is a connection to me in my business, you know, come up to me. It's like, hey, you know, I really appreciate your words of wisdom, because I have a gay son. And then through those conversations, I was able to land a new opportunity, a new partnership with a childcare brand. So, you know, just my authenticity has allowed me to open up in different areas, if it's my business, my personal life, and it's all free to me. It is, because I'm the person that's choosing to share myself to the world, and then people are attracted to me based off of that information.
That is beautiful. I love it. And you've driven the point home, and I'm at the risk of sounding like a broken record, because I've said this before. It's only been in the last few months, but I have definitely discovered that there is a direct link between vulnerability and manifestation.
Yes.
A direct link. And you have just once again, there have been multiple stories just in the episodes that I've recorded so far that have driven this point home, that when you got more vulnerable and started to let the world experience the real you, opportunities, people, resources, D, all of the above started to show up in your life that weren't available to you before. First of all, when we get vulnerable and when people are drawn into us because of that vulnerability, they will bend over backwards to help us. Yes. They will share resources with us. They will support us. They will introduce us to the right people that will help move us forward on our quest of whatever we're working on. There's a direct link. I have multiple friends in my life and my own life where I am seeing this manifestation elevated by my willingness to be vulnerable. So thank you for that piece of wisdom. That's absolutely beautiful. Yes. Is there anything else you would, I love the way you kind of wrap this all up and told what's really present in your life right now. Is there anything else you'd like to add, say to the listener before we wrap it up and move into rapid fire questions?
Yeah, the thing that's come up for me is, you know, just I really would like to encourage a listener, like there's opportunity. So, you know, through my process and through my journey, I have allowed that my authenticity has allowed me to create some beautiful relationships, like outside of the United States, like in Canada, more specifically, like there's just so much beauty that I am being attracted to. And I may not have this in my actual like environment, like my area, but my vulnerability and my authenticity is expanding around the world in my case. So I'm just developing like relationships and opportunities in so many areas, right? So in a nutshell, I'm trying to say is my authenticity, or I believe authenticity is like it's addicting. It will spread all over the world, and there's just so much awaiting when we just be ourselves and, you know, not be conformed of what is supposed to be. Like what
yes.
is
what yes, is. Yes, yes. One of my favorite sayings, and this is my saying, I made this up. Vulnerability builds bridges, opens doors, and clears pathways in a manner that nothing else can.
Perfect. I love it.
I do have one more question before we get to rapid fire. I thought about this a couple of moments ago and then it kind of went away and it came back. You have a lifelong history of financially like paying for love, attention, and approval.
Correct.
You've had this big breakthrough in this last year. Mm-hmm. Will you ever be tempted to pay for love, affection, and approval ever again?
No. The answer is no, 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 no. You know, material things outside is outside of me, right? So, you know, I have learned that I don't have to be money to the table. You know, love should be unconditional. I could be poor, I could be wealthy, I can be CEO, like it doesn't really matter. Like I don't have to bring, like if I have to bring love, if I have to bring money to the table, then that's not the connection that I need to be a part of.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And I agree wholeheartedly. You know, in my belief system, love, acceptance, approval, those are our birthright.
Yes.
All we have to do is just claim that birthright.
I agree.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, let's move into rapid fire questions. Are you prepared with, are you ready to give some rapid fire answers?
I am ready.
Beautiful. Yeah. When was the last time you cried in front of another gay man?
Ooh, I don't think I've ever cried in front of another gay man.
Okay.
No, I've never, and that's another area. I'm working on my emotional intelligence because I don't really cry often. So, but I don't think I've ever cried in front of another gay man. No.
Oh, I love your honesty. Absolutely. Yeah. If you could go back in time and say anything to your younger self, what would you tell him?
Oh, I love you, Little Warren. Continue being the superstar that you are and slay bridges. But specifically, I love you because that's something that he didn't hear.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Mm. Wow. I feel that in my body right now, Warren. I got cold chills running up and down me. Last rapid fire question. What is your superpower?
My superpower would be visionary. That comes instantly for me. It's like visionary, like just thinking out beyond the walls. I can do it for my life. I can do it for other people's lives. But just being a visionary and just seeing the best possibilities out there for anything.
I love that. That's amazing. Wow. This has been awesome. So I just want to say thank you so much for being a guest, coming on the podcast. I want to thank you for your very, very candid story, your very raw story. I think for me, you drew a picture that allowed me to not just hear it, but to feel it. And I hope that's true for the listener as well. I felt your story. And that's what makes for a good story, when you can feel it. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
I want to leave you with one thing. Mm-hmm. I want to let you know that you, Warren, are indeed an authentic gay man.
Thank you. I received that.